Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Janine Wiest, who is the author of The Alchemy of Self-Healing, a revolutionary 30-day plan to change how you relate to your body and health. Janine is an advanced certified craniosacral therapist, Reiki master, and holistic coach in L.A., California, and she's coming live today on Temple of Health Radio Show to tell you about the alchemy of self-healing. Welcome, Janine.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about how you became interested in the topic that you wrote about?
Well, I'm interested in things that are outside the box and alternative, largely because I was very ill in my 30s. And so when you're presented with people telling you this is the way it has to be and there are no options, I guess I've always been the kind of person who was disbelieving of that kind of determinism, I guess you could say. And so I've always looked outside the box, and that's what I did in my 30s to find alternative healing, and what I've continued to do. And I was so fascinated when I found craniosacral therapy that it really worked with the whole body and that it was very gentle. And so I actually got interested in changing my life completely and becoming a craniosacral therapist. So that's exactly what I did. And in the book, what I've done, in the years since, is sort of synthesized my own system. So I have a step-by-step system for people to develop a relationship with their body that I think most people don't have. I think most people have a relationship with their body that's adversarial, shall we say.
Right.
Especially women. If you ask them what they like about their body, you'll get a blank stare. Whereas if you say, what is it that you don't like about your body, they have a laundry list. No problem.
Right. Yeah.
No problem there, yeah. So in the book, what I've done is I've given really practical solutions and lots of tips. It was very important to me that it be really practical and something usable, which is why I call it a guidebook, and I've given you a 30-day plan so that you can really develop a relationship with your body, listen to the messages your body is constantly instant messaging you, and then what can you do with those? Use them so that you can develop a better relationship with your health, your body, and also then that has a ripple effect, doesn't it, out into the world, out into your relationships, your job, your work, and your hopes and dreams. Let's not forget your hopes and dreams.
So in the book, you talk about your experience with a pain in your hip. And I think a lot of people who don't really understand energy medicine would find it difficult to relate that pain in the hip can be a suppressed memory. Would you like to tell that story and how that triggered a memory that was important for you to release and work on?
Sure, yeah. Well, first I should give you a little definition of what craniosacral therapy is. It's an educated and specific, non-invasive touch that supports your body's innate ability to heal. So obviously what I'm doing in the book is I'm telling you what you can do for yourself, which is quite a lot, and you can learn a craniosacral touch so that you can actually use it on yourself as well as loved ones. But in this particular situation that you're referring to, the story that I tell, because I do have essays in the story to illustrate what I've just shared earlier in the chapter. And so in this particular story, I was actually on a table, a therapy table with a craniosacral therapist. And I had always had a problem with my hip, and I never really knew what it was, and nobody could figure out what it was. And we just basically knew it wasn't purely physical. And so I had what's called in this work a somato-emotional release on the table, which was a memory of something that happened to me in sixth grade when my best friend or my supposed best friend said something really mean to me in the girls' bathroom, which I think we all probably can relate to some childhood memory where something was said either thoughtlessly or deliberately to hurt you by a peer. And, you know, children don't have the ability to rationalize, to reason, to understand why something is said to them that's negative. And they believe that, you know, as children we believe that everything revolves around us. And so when something is said to us, we don't have the toolbox to make a decision that, you know, well, that's just their opinion. We just take it we take it in whole hog, we take it in full force, and we don't know what to do with it. So that we'll on a subconscious level, we'll decide, okay, what do I do with this? And in my case, I put it in my hip.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have the opportunity to work with it later in life, but at that time, you're just getting rid of it because you don't know what to do with it. And that's what happens when energy comes into our body that's other people's energy. We have, basically, there are three choices. It can go right through you, and that would be if you're more of a Dalai Lama type person, right? So most mm-hmm. of us are not that way. Certainly as a child, and most of the trapped energy that comes through you, there have been studies shown that it actually is from a very early age when you don't have the ability to decide, you know, a higher level of connection of what to do with that. So when you have this energy coming into your body, if it doesn't pass through you in that Dalai Lama way, it will get stuck. If you're lucky, it'll get stuck briefly, and then like the way animals do in the wild, you can shake it off and move on. But oftentimes, it will just get trapped, and it will get trapped cellularly. And craniosacral therapists can actually feel that. Energy medicine in several modalities, they can actually feel the density of the tissues change. Because, you know, you feel that on different levels. And so it might feel like something that's an area that's supposed to be fluid feels blocked, or it might feel, you might be able to actually feel the pain of where the muscles have contracted around that traumatic incident. So it's kind of interesting, and I can understand where somebody might think, well, that's a thought, and it's really, it might come in as a thought, but then it becomes very real. And I think we see that in all kinds of diseases, and this is really just sort of an energetic disease, really. Well, so in that story, I was able to release it by having the memory come forward in a safe, non-invasive environment.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to gently look at it and realize that story had been trapped there and was no longer serving me, which is, I think, something that people can do, and what I'm showing in the book that you can do for yourself, which is that's what's revolutionary about it. I'm basically handing the power to you, saying, here's some information, here are some very practical exercises, here is a step-by-step plan for you to actually be the architect of your own healing.
I think it's very important for the listening audience to understand that even minor things like, an insult or just something that you forget about for many, many years can lodge in tissue. But even more importantly, what we found working with cancer is that similar things that really victimize the person can lower the energy in the organ and invite cancer in. So this is very important work to understand. Understanding this can literally help you not succumb to something like cancer if you understand how this process works. So,
exactly, and by talking to your body, by actually mm-hmm. developing a habit of having a dialogue with your body, you can actually talk to the cells that have gone wayward and mm-hmm. replicated in a way that is not healthy for the body. You can have conversations. Sometimes cells are replicating and they don't know that they are hurting the host.
Right.
So actually,
that's
even
true.
on a cellular level, you can have a conversation. So people might say, "How do I have a conversation? I don't know how to do that." So there are. That's why I made this as such a specific, practical book, because I didn't want it to just be theory. I wanted it to be an actual revelation for people about how important it is to listen to your inner wisdom. And then you and your inner wisdom can, for example, have a conversation with cancer cells.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how many of my cancer patients actually know what initiated the cancer.
Yes, I think when people get really honest.
Right.
Yeah, when they get really honest with themselves, which oftentimes we have to do when we've had the shock of a cancer diagnosis, sometimes that mm-hmm. alone can put you into a situation where you're more reflective. And yes, the truth, you know, people know, we all do. We just sometimes power through things and say, hey, I can get through this, it doesn't matter, you know, but it does matter. Mm-hmm. And eventually there's a price to pay when you don't connect with yourself. And I think a lot of people live their life from the neck up and drag their body around like a badly packed suitcase. Mm-hmm. And they just think they can power through, or they think, well, I go to the gym, so that's my relationship with my body. Well, that's really not what's needed. And certainly in a situation where there's a diagnosis of cancer, you need to be gentle with yourself. You need to be specific. And so I have ways that you can work with the direction of ease, for example, in the body. And that's something for people healing themselves, working with their doctor on a cancer diagnosis, something that they can do that I'd like to offer. And the direction of ease simply means that you work the way in the direction that the body wants to go rather than the direction of barrier. And by moving in the direction of ease first, you will find that then you can go in the more difficult, move in the more difficult direction afterwards more easily as well. So, for example, I'll have people lie down on their back without a pillow, if possible, and turn their head slowly to the right a little bit, then to the left, back to center, then to the left a little bit, and see which way feels more comfortable, which way has more give, just off the top, right? Just the easiest way to go. And then you move in that direction and you hold your head towards that side as long as feels comfortable, maybe up to a minute. And then you move your head back to center and you'll then move your head in the direction that was a little more difficult, more restricted. And 9 times out of 10, you'll find that you can move then in that more restricted area. You'll find less restriction and more movement of ease. And you think, well, what did I just do? Well, what you did was you checked in with the body, what's more comfortable for the body, and you listened and honored that. So you moved in the direction that the body wanted to move, and then the body relaxed enough to allow you to move in the opposite, more restricted direction. And it seems like, well, that sounds so simple. How could it be that powerful? But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the power of simplicity and specificity.
That would be useful in physical therapy.
As well, absolutely. Absolutely. But it becomes sort of meditative in terms of someone recuperating from any kind of a chronic illness,
mm-hmm.
or feeling disconnected from their sense of purpose, feeling stressed beyond belief, having challenges that they feel are overwhelming. They have that ability to have that personal inquiry as to what part of my body needs to be heard at any given moment. So it becomes a shuttling. So yes, absolutely, it works for physical therapy, but it also works for your own internal sort of metaphysical therapy. and metaphorical therapy. And that's what I talk about in the book, the three levels that you can be aware on, and how when you're aware or have the ability to develop the muscle to be aware on all three levels, then you really have a powerhouse of energetic ability at your fingertips.
Have you done any work with patients where you ask them to go within to determine feelings and energy that may later on cause disease, but is at a time period now that is not yet causing disease, but could in the future?
Yes, and usually we ask for an inner guide, an inner wisdom to help us along when we do that kind of work. Because, you know, when you say, I don't know about that, or, you know, in terms of how your body is feeling, the fact is that part of you does know. Part of you is aware. Just as you were saying, when you talk to cancer patients, they know what that impetus was, where things began to go horribly wrong. They know. There's an inner knowing. It's just that we layer it over with all of our rationalizations and our busyness and our even disbelief that we can have that power, because the whole healthcare system is set up where you hand your power over to somebody else. So the simple act of having it be a conversation with an expert rather than I just hand everything over to you and you tell me what to do, just the simple act of taking back a little bit of your power and having a conversation, having a dialogue with your healthcare experts as well as with yourself, with your own precious body, becomes a real defining, powerful act. So absolutely, and when people come to me and we discover a slight, they'll say, I don't know, I just feel a little buzzing in my abdomen and I'm not quite sure what that's about. You know, we can take a look at things that are maybe setting themselves up for a future disease and release them now. If it's taking up space in your body and not paying rent, let's move it on out. Let's either transform it, which is why the book is called The Alchemy of Self-Healing, because there's an alchemical process there. It's a process where people think of alchemy as a process whereby something ordinary becomes extraordinary. It can be also where something seeking wholeness becomes whole. So we can think of the classic straw into gold, Rumpelstiltskin. So what's your straw? So for example, there might be a weak part of your body. You know, sometimes when people come in with repetitive injuries, if you keep hurting the same part of your body over and over again and there's no physical reason for it, then there's another layer there. Yes?
Yep.
So when there's that other layer, you could say that's the straw that needs to be turned into gold, whether it's reframing a toxic perspective that's been handed down by your family. In some cases, this can enhance your life, but in some cases, as we're talking about, it can save your life. It can give you a new perspective, a much wider perspective.
From my experience, treated a lot of patients for trauma as a trauma surgeon, a plastic surgeon doing trauma. I used to cover 6 emergency rooms and did a lot of hand surgery and traumatic hand surgery. And what we found was that injuries to the hand were not random. The majority, in fact, almost all the patients I saw, if they injured their thumb, there was a will issue involved. If they injured their index finger, there was a faith issue involved. Middle finger was self-love, self-worth. Ring finger was money and material things. And little finger was relationship and sex. So I used to say the some injuries were usually drunk or, you know, otherwise belligerent. The index finger injuries were more spiritual people. The middle finger injuries were telling me how stupid they were for injuring their finger. The ring fingers wanted to know how much it was going to cost to fix it. And the little finger patients were trying to pick me up.
Isn't that funny?
So, yeah, yeah. But let
yes,
me tell
I know.
You,
it's powerful, the messages from the body.
Oh, yeah. And I had dinner with Dr. Kleinert, who was considered the father of hand surgery. And I told him my story about this, and you could see his mind going, and he looked at me, and he says, "Susan, I think that's correct." So he went back to, you know, to go through his memory banks, and isn't that interesting? So no
yes,
injury
no, it
is random. No injury is random. And what I would tell my patients, I would tell them about the issues. Like the faith patients, I would say there's something that you're, you know, your inner wisdom or higher self is trying to tell you that you're blocking. And if you can please get in touch with that, then you won't re-injure this finger.
Yes.
See?
Well, first of all, you have to be willing and open to the idea that it's not random. And that right there is huge. You know, so for example, in my experience, right thumb problems are people who are having difficulties with self-empowerment and their methods of manifestation. Whereas a left thumb person would have issues concerning the nature of motivations in their manifestation. Mm-hmm. So what is it that they want to manifest? So the right thumb people would kind of know what they want to manifest but not be able to do it, and the left thumb people really would just not have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, in that scenario, first you have to be willing to own it, and it can be scary. So what I would say to your listeners is that there are ways that you can then not be afraid and actually see it as a wonderful tool to have. It's an empowering thing to be able to say, okay, I own this. I own, like you were, for example, you were saying, I own this that I'm so concerned with how much this is going to cost that I don't recognize the cost of what I've created, that I've co-created this.
Yeah, and
I think that's
in
really
my experience,
powerful.
Right, in my experience, if say you just, you know, injure your index finger in a door, you know, you close the door in your finger and it hurts, but, you know, it's not that bad. You don't have to go to the emergency room. If you then think, but wait a minute, what is it that I'm not, you know, bringing forth because I don't have faith? Or that I'm not willing to listen to, you know, that small, still voice that says, quit your job. This job isn't good for you, but you don't do it because you are convinced that the economy is so bad you'll never find another job. If you will then, with that small message, really go into meditation and try to figure out what that was all about, then you might be able to prevent the time when you take a knife and cut your tip off, and then
right.
You do have to
like
go to
if you don't hear the
room.
Little, you don't
exactly.
Hear the little tiny knock, then you get the 2x4 over the head.
Exactly, and
right.
And I see that in my personal life and in my practice that people, well, the patients that come to me are more spiritually aware, obviously, so they're much more open to the ideas we're talking about today. But everything, every organ problem, every, you know, pre-malignancy, everything has spiritual meaning as far as I can see. It's
absolutely, and it's going to be specific to the person, so that's a wonderful opportunity to do a little detective work. And
right.
That's why right away in the first chapter I have, and I call it the alchemy quiz, but it's an inquiry for you to just see where you are right now. Where are you in terms of your relationship with your body? And then at the end of the book, you have the opportunity to take that same quiz again and actually physically chart your changes to see what's shifted and what's different. And hopefully you've been able to become more of an inner alchemist, as I call it in the book, so that you can really befriend your body And that's, I think, what we're talking about. I think for most people, the idea of their body being a wise ally is a foreign one. They're more comfortable seeing it as, oh, this thumb isn't doing what I want it to do. It's not the way it was when I was in my 20s. And they have a whole storyline underlying that is actually disconnecting themselves from their, in this case, let's say, thumb. And how is that beneficial? It's actually quite detrimental. So it's a relearning, it's a rehabiting, and developing a way of widening your perspective so that you're inclusive rather than exclusive in terms of your body. And I think when you do that, then you find that there's more of a your body will be willing to do more for you and heal more quickly. I know I find in terms of clients that come to me before and after a surgical procedure, I'll give them exercises to lower their internal alarm system so that they can move from fight or flight to rest and repair more smoothly. Mm-hmm. And I teach people how to do something called a still point, which is actually a craniosacral exercise that I love, and it's how to put yourself into that healing mode with a really super light touch so you can actually put yourself into rest and repair, which is the self-healing mode, of course. So, you know, it's really important to remember that we don't stop at our skin and that our energy and our you-ness encompasses that much larger energetic field, which is called really your luminous energy field.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bring that into your healing equation, then more rapid healing will result. And I give people, you know, for example, Qigong is a wonderful healing method, Chinese mm-hmm. healing method, but it's very dense and it requires years of study. The Qigong masters that have worked with me are, I mean, that's really, they live and breathe it. And I think it's not practical to think that in our society people are going to go take a Qigong class and, you know, envelop themselves in that work. So I've given one or two really powerful exercises that can be done, incorporated, for example, into a morning routine, that will give them the ripple effect that they need if they are, as you say, able to own that they have co-created whatever it is, even to the point of the seemingly, you know, oh, I just slammed my finger in a door, it didn't really mean anything. No, if you're willing to take that extra moment, and it really only takes a second to just do a quick check through and say, what's that all about? It might even just mean that you need to slow down, that you need to be more conscious with what you're doing in the moment now rather than rushing ahead, racing ahead to the next, you know, crisis or...
Yeah, right.
So...
Well, we do surgery frequently here at Plastikos, and we have the surgery center here in the building. And it's very safe. We've never even cracked the crash cart since 95, and we feel that, you know, we have great MD Anesthesia and JACO Certified Surgery Center. Our nurses are very highly trained. But despite all that, and I do understand that this is often beyond the conscious control of people, many people who sit in that pre-op room are very concerned that they're not going to live through surgery. And I think it's because they're not well. They come in very ill from defective breast implants, either chemical toxicity or biotoxicity from mold. In fact, we were on the 20th, we were just on Monsters Inside Me with a patient very sick from mold biotoxins from leaking saline breast implants. Mm. So, you know, because they're so ill and because their energy is so low, they have concerns about their, you know, making it through surgery. And I was just wondering if you have any ideas about how, what exercises or what comes to mind when I describe that to you? How can we help them energetically get to a better place of trust?
Well, the first
thing,
really,
is a trust issue.
It is a trust issue, and it's a trusting themselves issue, really. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, what comes to mind is the triangle of disempowerment, which mm-hmm. is something that once you're aware of, you can see where you are in the triangle, what role you're playing at any given time. And then the prescription for that is to step away from the triangle.
Okay.
So it sometimes puts things in perspective. So the points of the triangle, one would be victim, one mm-hmm. would be perpetrator, and one would be rescuer. So mm-hmm. if you find yourself, which I imagine those people in your waiting room are seeing themselves as a victim.
Right.
So
yeah.
The prescription again would be to remove yourself from the victim role, to know that you have a choice. So what I'm big on in this book and in the work I do is to remove yourself from any situation where you have painted yourself into a corner and you think there is no choice. There is always a choice, even mm-hmm. at the most extreme, a choice to die on your own terms.
Right.
So the role of victim, once you recognize that it's a role, it's not you, it's not all of you, you can then summon up the part of you that's the fighter, the archetype in you that is the, you know, the that really wants to live, that wants to embrace, because that's what's really necessary for proper healing as well. And I'm sure you find that the people who heal more quickly are the ones who not only expect to, but have things in place for themselves, whether it's routine or ritual or a belief system in place for themselves, so that they can so that they sort of have a well to draw from, right? A well of empowerment to draw from, rather than just sitting there being terrified, which doesn't do anybody any good, and certainly doesn't do you good on a cellular level, because your body then is in a contraction mode, and when you're contracting, that's not a great place for any kind of healing to begin to occur. So the first thing that comes to mind is the triangle of disempowerment, and perhaps even to have something in the office that, you know, or with given to hand it out with the preparatory work. I would think that just sometimes even being aware of it, like, wow, this is the point I am at this in this triangle. Is this serving me?
And I really think the surgery is a great boundary between being a victim and not being a victim, because number
yes.
one, their intuition got them here, and we're literally the only place in the world that knows how to treat these things. So that was a small miracle in itself. So, you know, your higher self got you to the place where you can be helped, and then you can step away from the surgery not being a victim at all.
Yes. Yes, and so you can decide also, are you going to own that part of you that, you know, I think that's wonderful that you're actually saying to them, you showed up for yourself. I think that's the more that the doctor can empower their patient, the better, mm-hmm. because the patient is taking that body, that one precious body, and leaving the doctor and living inside that vessel for the rest of their life. The doctor's not going
right.
to be there following them around. So, in other words, if they feel as though the more that you can say, I mean, I always say to people when they say, oh, you did this for me, I'll say, well, you did it and I facilitated it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having that, just having that slight switch and catching them when they are willing to give me all the credit is really powerful, because let's face it, they're going to leave you and go out into the world, and if they feel that it was only because of you that something good happened, they really haven't taken it. They don't have the real right takeaway, do they?
No, I had a patient from West Virginia, a very person without much means, had been sick for a while, single mother, and she called me and she kept telling me how she couldn't make it down here. I can't. And so something in me said, well, if you keep saying you can't, you never will. And she took that to heart, and she went and she asked her church for help. She found out about angel flight that would fly her down here. She found out that people really would give money for her healing. You know, people that, you know, she couldn't go to her family, but people in her church would. And she made it down here for her surgery.
But well, and see,
as long as she's saying she can't, you know, she's talking herself out of it.
So she moved out of victim role, and she chose
that.
She
did.
So her negative story was what was trapped energetically in her body's tissues, the
right.
Negative story of, I can't, nobody mm-hmm. will help, this won't
right.
be possible. But yet she yeah. was still keeping up a communication with you. So
mm-hmm.
obviously there was the part of her, and that's what I'm talking about, the part of you that knows the answer is going to mm-hmm. keep talking, even if it's the part of you that's going to create a disease in your body to get your attention. I mean, it's a shame
mm-hmm.
if it takes that. But I had a breast cancer patient say that she felt that she went through radiation and chemo so much better because she was able to, she had developed this system that I teach in the book of the ability to connect with her body at the slightest, you know, at the slightest shift and change, rather than,
mm-hmm.
as we were talking about, getting the 2x4 over the head.
Right.
And so she was able to tell her body, listen, this is, we're putting this in our system, and it might cause problems, but I'm choosing this. This is not something to fight. Because your body doesn't know when it gets an injection of something that's essentially poison. It doesn't know that whether it's good or bad unless you tell it. So it's just going to mount a defense.
Right.
And, you know, but it will be less likely to mount that defense if you've had a conversation with it and informed it about what's about to happen. You know, it's the same thing when you think of the idea of creative visualization. For example, a ball player, when they see themselves hitting a home run, they actually go through. They don't just say, "Oh, well, I'm really hoping that I hit a home run." No, they're really very in a sensory way, which is what I teach. In a sensory way, they're going through all the motions of that go into hitting a home run. They see themselves stretching beforehand, walking out to the mound, to the plate, seeing themselves moving their arms in the right direction, picking up the bat, feeling the weight of the bat. So on every sensory way, the resin that they put, does that have a smell? All of these things. So if you can go through your a sense memory in that way, a creative visualization for yourself, really that specifically, really step by step without glossing anything over, you're far more likely to find your body willing to tolerate chemo, for example, or heal, knit a tissue back together more smoothly with less granulation.
True. Well, we're coming up to the end of the hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Well, what I'd like to recommend to people, if they're curious at all about my work, is if you go to my website, cranialalchemy.com, and I'll spell that in just a moment, I do offer a free meditation of the very first inquiry from the first chapter. And it's it's about 23 minutes, and it will give you a real sense of what this, the kind of inquiries that I have you do throughout the book are like. And so that's cranialalchemy.com, C-R-A-N-I-A-L, and then alchemy, A-L-C-H-E-M-Y.com. And certainly if anybody is going through a specific getting ready for a specific procedure and they have a specific question, I can certainly direct them to certain areas in the book that will help with the rest and recovery elements. So just the idea of keeping your body, having your body be a wise ally, just dropping that into your thinking and allowing the ripple effects outward is healing. Noticing is healing. So I'll leave everybody with that.
And perhaps it's important also to emphasize there are many ways of getting information from the body. One, like you say, is to, you know, become aware of sensations, of changes, you know, in real time. But many people get information through the dream state or through other means that are very interesting. Like, it's not at all uncommon to have an injury and during the diagnostic test for that injury to see that you have a cancer that you wouldn't have known about. You see,
it's your body letting you know.
It is. In fact, even allowing itself to become injured in order to
have something
reveal
discovered.
Something that may not be having any symptoms. You may not be able to have symptoms because of, you know, it's deep inside the body and just isn't causing symptoms. Like a, you know, a lung tumor, just not is not going to cause a symptom. You know, so
yes, exactly.
There's all sorts of really amazing things that happen all the time. And, doctors really do know that these things occur. And, you know, it's very, very important to understand there's more than just one way to get this information.
Well, and I have doctor friends who say, because I talk a lot about art, I work a lot with artistic people and creative people, and my doctor friends say that when medicine is at its finest, it's an art.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that's what you do. And so everything is connected, and you shouldn't disconnect something or say, well, that has nothing to do with me. Look for the connection first, because you may find, as you say, the key that will unlock, you know, something deep inside your body that has not yet manifested as an illness and doesn't need to. If you only will listen.
So, do you have any? You gave one message to the listening audience. Is there any other information you'd like to give out in the last few minutes we have?
I'd really like to just say that I invite you to tap into your body wisdom, so that you can find healing and even joy sometimes when you don't think it's possible, and that if you widen your perception to be inclusive rather than exclusive, you will be able to change. You will be able to shift. You will, by honoring the universe that's inside you, your external world will shift and change for the better.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. That has been a great, great conversation. We've been interviewing Janine Wiest, who is the author of The Alchemy of Self-Healing. She has a 30-day plan that will allow you to get in touch with your body, learn how to determine if your body is giving you messages that you need to listen to, and overall just have a better relationship with your body, becoming more aware and more in tune with what it is going through. So thanks a lot, Janine. I appreciate you spending the time with us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we are going to interview Dr. Carl Kalaman, The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, A Novel Theory of Our Origins. And on the 6th, My Life Contract, a 90-day program for prioritizing goals, staying on track, keeping focus, and getting results. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.